Good evening, everyone. Welcome to another episode of Tectonic. My name is Mark Hurst. I'll be your host for the next hour here. I am so happy that you have chosen to spend an hour with us at Tectonic. It is a special evening. I have, for the first time in probably, I don't know how many years, I have multiple live in-studio guests who we are going to get to shortly. I just want to say something about the topic we're going to be talking about, because we have in the studio, we have three members of the Luddite Club, which is a Brooklyn-based club of teenage Luddites. You're going to hear all about it. You're going to hear from them. I just wanted to set a little context to remind you that we have covered Luddites and Luddism on this show in the past. You might remember a few months ago, I had Brian Merchant on the show talking about his book, Blood in the Machine, which gave a history of the Luddite movement in 19th century England. One thing that we learned from that book that is correcting a common misconception about Luddites. A lot of people, when they hear the word Luddite, they think, oh, that's the kind of person who's anti-technology, who lives in a cave somewhere, who doesn't want to make any use of the fruits of all of this technical magic that we have in these heady days of technological infatuation. They don't want any of that. They're saying no to everything. They're boring, you know. And that's actually not true. Historically, the Luddites were people who were in favor of questioning technology and using technology selectively if it helped them and their family and their community. And just as one example, you might have heard of the frame breakers, the so-called frame breakers, the Luddites who would go in under cover of darkness and go into a factory and would destroy some of the machines, clothing making machines. They would only destroy those machines that they felt were unfair economically to labor at that time. They would leave untouched the other machines that they felt were okay. Again, they were selective in their actions, and they were thoughtful in their actions. And what Brian Merchant suggested, and what I agreed with, and what I've long thought, is that we need more Luddites today. We need a new Luddite movement, people who are going to question technology and use technology when it is right for the situation, when it's right for the context or the community that you're in. And so imagine how delighted I was to come across this New York Times article. This was from December 15, 2022, and the headline was, "Luddite Teens Don't Want Your Likes." This was written by Alex Vadukul in the New York Times, and it talked about this Luddite club, this so-called Luddite club, self-described, based in Brooklyn, made up of teenagers who were adopting some unusual practices for teenagers today, which we're just about to hear about. And I was so impressed with what these young people were doing, not just showing the way for other teenagers, but showing the way for the world, how people should be engaging with and having encounters with this new technology that's coming at us. And one thing led to another, and here we are almost 2 years later, and I'm so happy to tell you that we have three members of the Luddite Club here in Studio A to be interviewed. And let me see if I can turn on the mics. This is the first time, again, that I've had live in-studio guests for years. So let me say hello. Sasha, are you there?
I'm here.
Hi, Sasha.
Hi.
Jameson, are you with us?
Yep.
Get right up on it, Jameson.
Hello, everyone.
Sounds great. And Lucy, are you with us?
I'm with you.
Thanks so much for being with us. Sasha, Jameson, and Lucy, welcome to Tectonic. Thank you for taking some time to talk with us this evening. So first, and any of you can jump in and answer this, or multiple of you, can you just give us a basic overview of the Luddite Club? What does it mean to be a member of the Luddite Club?
So I would say that being a member of the Luddite Club just means that you're somebody who takes into consideration the ways which technology might be affecting your life. Not necessarily somebody who, like you were saying, stays away from technology completely, but somebody who's like aware of the implications it may have in your life. And sometimes, like we like to say, it's not against technology, but against the abuse of technology. Yeah.
Okay. And so what would Sasha or Lucy, what are some of the practices that you've adopted that might be a little bit unusual for teenagers that set you apart as members of the Luddite Club?
Well, personally, I have a flip phone, and I've been off social media and had a flip phone for 2 years. Before that, I was fully on social media using everything, and then I just stopped one day. So I'd say most people are on social media, especially teenagers, and it's taught me a lot to be off of it. Other than that, it's a different social group that's created by the Luddite Club. Like, a lot of my friends don't use social media, so it kind of sets you apart in a way and isolates you in a way.
Yeah, I don't know. Honestly, yeah, the social media thing was a lot because a lot of people, like, reference things and just, like, the culture. Like, I guess, like, humor. Like, our generation's humor, I don't understand a lot of the time.
Meaning there are memes that people send around and you didn't get to see them when they got sent?
Yeah, like our little sister, she uses a lot of technology, social media, all this stuff, and she sometimes says things and I like just don't understand. She has to explain it to me, and that's kind of how.
You're saying in the same house, you've got a little sister who is on social media and devices and everything.
Heavily, yeah.
Wow. Have you tried to get your sister to join the Luddite Club?
Yeah, we wanted her to be, like, the future, like, because we're all going to graduate next year, go to our separate colleges. She's kind of opposed to the idea, but, I mean, I think it'll start to grow on her when she, like, realizes.
You know, I love it that you're in 12th grade, and you're thinking about the next the generation coming behind you. You're thinking about the young people.
Yeah, you gotta have a succession plan, too, for the club.
It's important. And in all seriousness, how is that going? Do you have other younger members?
Just recently, actually, this Sunday, we had a new member show up who found us through CBS and then emailing somebody at CBS and somehow got connected. And they showed up at Luddite Club and they're in 10th grade and they seem like a promising candidate. But we definitely have struggled to reach like a somewhat younger audience than 12th graders.
Right. Now, Sasha, you said that you use a flip phone. You've been on a flip phone for 2 years off of social media. Does that mean, let me put it this way. Some people say, well, I'm on a flip phone on weekends, but then I use an iPhone or an Android device during the week because I have to. Are you saying that you are exclusively on a flip phone?
Yeah, I don't have a phone. I sold it right after I switched because I wasn't going back. And I've used an iPhone actually traveling this summer, and it kind of didn't affect me at all. Like, I think I fully adapted to it. I couldn't imagine switching between them.
And how is it using a flip phone for some of the normal, normal uses? For example, texting. Do you text on your flip phone?
Yeah, I'm totally used to it. I kind of text faster on a flip phone, actually.
Really?
Yeah, because an iPhone just feels weird in my hands now. I mean, I don't send, like, long texts. Usually I call people, but I have no issue with it. Also, email. Like, everyone has an email. Everyone can use email. They just don't.
So you're able to send texts and emails and obviously make phone calls to your friends who may be on an iPhone or some other surveillance device.
Yeah, I also can be in group chats now because Apple's more inclusive to the Android users. They used to not be allowed for, like, a short period of time. But now I'm pretty connected to my friends. I don't think there's ever an issue.
Now, if someone would show up, let's say, a ninth or tenth grader, and you say, oh, a young person is showing up. This is great. And they say, I want to join, but I want to keep using my iPhone. Do you have any requirements for membership?
No, we do not. We actually have several members in the club who do still have iPhones.
Okay. And is that part of the discussions at meetings?
A little bit. I mean, I'm not in like an aggressive pushing my agenda way, but, and I only got a flip phone recently. It's been a few months, but I kind of try to like edge people off their things. Like I just like, if I have friends and I'm like, well, you know, you don't really need this. I just like put the thought in their head and that's all it takes. You need to plant a seed. And then that, you know, a couple months later they might delete something or they might lower their usage, or it's just like giving people the idea and telling them you can do this. Like we did it. You can do it too. That's what matters.
Lucy, say more about your experience, because it sounds like you recently went to a flip phone. How has that been for you?
It's actually, I mean, my phone before, I had an iPhone 6 and it kind of like, it had like maybe an hour of active use battery on it. It was a piece of junk, but, and I like tried to like downgrade it as much as I could, but I got the flip phone, I think on my dad's birthday this year, like sometime August, and I got it because Sasha said that I wouldn't be able to do it.
It was a challenge.
Yeah, it was a challenge, and I haven't gone back, and it's been fun, honestly. Like, it's fun to text. Like, now it's like a game, and like my schoolwork, I kind of have to like do it all at night or in the morning, and I have to like get it done. I have like checklists and I do my stuff, which before was an issue because I'd go to school and I'd be like, oh, I'll do like my math homework while I'm in school. But now I'm like done with everything and I have time to like read and just think and stuff.
Let's talk about some of the activities that this opens up, because without spending time on social media, that presumably gives you more time to do other things. So you just talked about reading, Lucy. So Jameson, Sasha, what are some of the things that you're finding you're doing with this newfound time?
Well, after I got a flip phone, I always like sewed my own clothes, but I started doing it more and more because I had like almost nothing else to do, because you're just like, a lot of your time is spent passively when you're constantly distracted by your phone. And so I was making things, and also, I mean, to this day, I still do read a lot. Like, every time I have downtime, which isn't that much, but, like, the time that I would spend scrolling if I had a phone is just reading. Like, before I go to sleep, maybe, like, in the middle of the day when I'm on transportation.
Are you reading on a digital device, or are you reading in print?
Well, actually, I read in print up until, like, a month ago. I got a Kindle. It's so convenient.
Okay.
Because, like, books are so expensive, so I kind of just want to be able to read more, because I feel like when I ran out of books to read in my house, so I was just like, why don't I get a Kindle? And I tried it out. I know that's like contradictory to the idea maybe, but I don't think it's abuse because I'm using it for reading.
Yeah, and again, going back to my introductory comments and what Jameson said at the beginning, it's all about thinking what works for you and what's providing you with good outcomes, right? Do you have a book recommendation? Is there one book that's really grabbed you that you would recommend to other aspiring Luddites?
Oh, actually, we read Technopoly in my English class last year.
By Neil Postman. Love it.
Yeah, it was really cool. I mean, it was a summer reading, so I didn't really learn about it until we started the school year. But I did read it, and it was really interesting because I was like, wow, this is everything I think, and it's in a book.
I love that. The Luddite Club members are now reading Technopoly. Another generation discovers Neil Postman. Very, very important thinker. You know, he was at NYU and wrote several books. One of his inspirations, actually, was a French technology critic, mid-20th century, named Jacques Ellul. Have you ever heard of Jacques Ellul? Postman probably, I would guess that Postman references Ellul in Technopoly. So If you're ready to make the next step into Postman's inspirations, I would look into Ellul. That's very impressive that you read Technopoly. Jameson, how about you? What are some things that we've heard reading? We've heard sewing. What else?
I really kind of like Sasha was saying, like, I'm just taking a more active role in my life, which that looks like for me is just I have a bunch of different hobbies and I'm trying out new things every week, but mostly just creating. Like, I'm just a creator and I have so much time to write things, draw things, paint things, sew things, sculpt things, and also like take classes. In New York City, there's so many great free resources for high school students, and just being able to like totally take advantage of all these resources and like, I know, always educating myself and, I know, taking an active role in my life, like finding ways to do what I want to do.
And that's great preparation for college. I know all three of you are in 12th grade. You're looking at college next year, and that's part of what you're going to be doing at college, right, is looking at all of the opportunities wherever you end up and choosing your path. One of you told me before we began the show about an unusual college in California. Was that you, Lucy?
Yeah.
Tell me about this college. I am sorry to say I'd never heard of this. I was glad to learn about this. What is the college and what is so unique about this college?
Well, Jameson and her friend actually were the first people to like mention it to me, but it's a college near Death Valley in California, and it's a Nunnian school. So they practice, they have like pillars of things that they believe in, like academics. They have a labor pillar, so you're doing chores, you're like you're doing upkeep on the, it's kind of like a farm, like you have to raise your own food and all this stuff. And
it's called
Deep Springs.
Yeah. Okay.
And it's cool because it's like there's 30 kids, there's 15 admitted in every grade, not that many apply. There's like 8 essays and you have to submit a reading list and all these things. So they really like know people want to go there when they apply.
And did you describe Deep Springs as a Luddite college?
Yeah, because one of the things that they like make sure you know is like they have an isolationism policy. So you're really isolated from the rest of the world. You don't really have internet. They have like a landline. You can send emails, but it's not like people don't have their own like handheld devices like normally.
Really?
Yeah.
So they're encouraging the students at Deep Springs to adopt some of the same practices that you're already following in the Luddite Club.
Yeah, I've read like the president's letter, and they talk a lot about how people usually partake in escapism and like take things and use them to like get out of their like self. And their whole thing is that they don't allow substances, phones, any of that stuff, because it's like they want you to be there and like experiencing the struggle so that you grow as a person. And I think that translates a lot into the Luddite Club, because it's like we're trying to be present and like progress as people.
Mm-hmm. That's fascinating. Do you know about any other schools like Deep Springs that have adopted some sort of Luddite policy?
Honestly, not that I am aware of, no.
There's some mountain school that people have been going to, but it's like a, I would say, maybe rehabilitation place for like high school. A lot of people have went there for like a semester in high school, and I don't think they allow phones.
Rehab as in if someone has an addiction or something and then...
Not necessarily. Like any sort of like kind of mental issue.
Oh, okay.
Like if something happens to them, I don't know. It's like therapeutic.
Right. And so they make sure there are no devices there distracting them. That makes sense. I did hear about a place, listeners may know more than I do about this, but I read about this place once. I want to say it was in West Virginia somewhere, the small town where there is some very sensitive electronic equipment, I think maybe for astronomy. And because of that, they can't have any radiation coming off of surveillance phones or maybe even flip phones. I mean, I think there's no wireless technology. And so in this whole town, it's landlines and
wow.
And print. And I think some people go there who are worried about, radiation, ambient radiation from cell towers and whatnot. But I think really it's there just to protect whatever the equipment is. And that would be somewhat of a Luddite lifestyle to move there. Do you think you would like being in a larger community where more people are off their phones?
That's a good question. I don't know if I would, because I like the busy culture of people kind of just, like, I like living, for example, in like a big city where everything's connected. I don't know how that would work if everything was old-fashioned, more like, because I'm still involved in the culture. I just don't know if everyone was not involved, if it would be the same, or if to that extent we could still have life like we have it today.
Right.
Yeah.
Jameson?
I think that, like, that sounds like a dream to me, to be around. I think just especially, maybe, I don't know about no phones completely, but it would be really nice to be somewhere where when I'm having a conversation with somebody, there's no chance that they, like, pick up their phone or pull out their phone and start. I don't know. That just, there's certain things that really, really bother me. And I think being, like, that's why I love Luddite Club. Like, being in a phone-free environment, you don't realize all the, like, little ways it's impacting the environment. Like, there's a conversation, but you see out of the corner of your eye somebody reaching to pick up their phone. And it's just, I don't know. Being in a phone-free environment, you gotta try it. It's amazing, yeah.
So the phone-free environment that you're talking about, that's at the meetings, the Luddite Club meetings,
yeah.
Right? So tell us a little bit about the meetings. How often are they? Where do you hold them? And what are some of the things that you do at the meetings?
Well, we have them at Tech. We're the only school club that, like, we run, I guess. We have them on Mondays in the school. And then we have meetings on Sundays, every Sunday at 2 p.m. by the library steps. Sometimes the, like, time changes a little, but generally that's what it is. And the meetings are kind of, like, it's just kind of a get-together. And a lot of the time we end up having really interesting conversations. It just kind of funnels into that. And I think it's really nice because a lot of the time you spend time with people and you kind of talk about maybe more shallow things and you don't really do much. But here it's kind of like we're all gathered for, like, a central cause and we all know it. So we automatically have that, like, connection point and we all are passionate about it.
Are you talking about how to spread the word about Luddite practices, or do you talk about other topics that don't have to do with your Luddism? What are the topics? Are you talking about how can we get more people to understand the benefits of this? Is that the kind of thing that you talk about?
Sometimes, yeah. Because a lot of the time, I mean, some of us have flip phones, but a lot of us don't. So it's like, and I've had it for a short time, so I'm also in both boats in a way. But, like, it's just kind of, like, not promoting, like, the life, but, like, talking about it and just, like, getting it all out in the open. Because to some people it's a little bit taboo, like, this idea that there's this group of kids, you know. Like, it's, I don't know. And it's, we do talk about spreading it. Mm-hmm. We haven't done, like, a crazy amount, but we've been talking about flyers, posters, things like that, just to get people
cool.
to come.
Yeah.
Now, the New York Times article that I mentioned before, that came out in December 2022, that profiled the founder or a founder of the club named Logan Lane. Mm-hmm. Was Logan the originator of the Luddite Club?
Yeah. Well, so the story goes that Logan, when I met her, she actually didn't have a phone at all. She would just, like, email you, like, hey, let's meet here at 2 p.m., and you would just try to be on time as best you could. But, and I had a flip phone, and we ran into each other at a show, just, like, a local show, and immediately there was this crazy connection of, I was like, I have never met another teenager who's actively trying to get off their phone. Like, this is insane. But in true Luddite fashion, we didn't get each other's contact information. But then it must have been fate, because we met at our local library, the Central Public Library, which is, like, a religious place for us. We met there on a Saturday, both checking out books, and we went for a walk in the park, and we were just talking, and she was talking about how she really wants to create a space for, like, like-minded people, you know, create a phone-free environment, essentially. And I was on board, and from there, we kind of just started spreading the word, and she started a club at her school, Murrow.
Yeah. Okay, so it was you and Logan, Jameson.
Yeah.
Oh, wow. That's really cool. And then from there, did it spread to both of your schools, or what happened in the next couple of years?
Yeah, so it was then a club at Murrow. It was too late for me to start a club at Brooklyn Tech. Like, I think the date for new clubs had passed. So it was only a club at Murrow, but then an outside of school club on Sundays that has been meeting for like 3 years now. And then this year, me and Lucy started a Luddite club at our school, Brooklyn Tech. And yeah, that's been the evolution of the club. But now there are actually Luddite clubs popping up all over.
All over the U.S., beyond
yeah,
the U.S.?
We have one in Telluride, Colorado. Shout out to Telluride. We have one, I believe, in Arizona. We have an adult Luddite club that
really?
Somebody's trying to start in New York.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah, and one in Washington, D.C., because it's been turned into a nonprofit now, and we have, like, a charter of, so you want to start a Luddite club. And it's a charter of basically our ideals and stuff like that, because we really want this message to spread. And we got so much positive feedback from the article of people being like, this is exactly what I need. And so, yeah.
Where can people get more information? If they're listening to Tectonic and they're thinking, this is it, I want to start my own Luddite club, what should they do?
I believe you go, I'm not very involved in the website, but I think it's the Luddite Club. You should look up the Luddite Club nonprofit, and I'm sure yeah. something will come up. I think it's like LudditeClub.org, LudditeClub.com, but you'll find it if you on Safari or
okay.
something.
Well, we will use our favorite non-monopolistic search engine to find that and get all the relevant information. I just wanted to follow up on one thing you said there, Jameson, that the Central Library said is kind of a religious space. Is that
yeah.
is that Brooklyn Public Library?
Yeah, that is the Brooklyn Public Library, who we're all huge fans of, all huge patrons. Like, I've gone to several lectures there, programs. They're amazing. They have instruments for you. They have photo equipment, like anything you want, go to your local library. And yeah, they've become like super important in our story. That's where we meet every Sunday. We actually did an interview for their podcast, which was like really amazing.
Oh, that's
to
great.
Meet them. Yeah.
All right. So shout out to Brooklyn Public Library.
Yeah.
Also in New York City, we have Queens Public Library. Mm-hmm. And then in Bronx, Manhattan, and Staten Island, we have the New York Public Library. And wherever you're listening from, listeners, as Jameson said, go to your public library and see what are the books they have and what are the instruments, musical instruments that you could check out. That's very much in line with Luddite practices, right? To
yeah.
see what the library has.
Totally.
I have a question about some difficulties that you might have to surmount if you are adopting some of these practices. So, Lucy or Sasha, take something like GPS. That's a feature that a lot of people use their surveillance phone for to get directions. It's not as toxic as the social media services. It has some use. Do you find that navigation is more difficult on your flip phone, or do you have a way of doing that?
Well, I ask people for directions on the street a lot if I need it, but otherwise, my sense of direction's adapted because I never really before my flip phone had to use my brain to get places because Google Maps is so easy. But when you actually don't look at Google Maps, you like realize what like addresses and street names are for, and it's so easy to get around if you just look. So I've been fine for the most part. Sometimes I have to call a friend to get somewhere, but that's very rare. It's not really a problem for me anymore.
Yeah, well, we had a situation a few weeks ago where Sasha got extremely lost and I had to come find her. But other than that, I mean,
that
I don't...
That was the first time.
Okay, well, it was very lost. But other than that, I think a lot of the places that I go, you just look at a train map and then, like, you're usually on the train getting somewhere and then you look at a train map and you can, like, locate where you're going to go. And it's pretty simple.
And especially in a place like New York City, especially if you're in Manhattan, you know, as a Manhattanite myself, it is very difficult to get lost in most parts of Manhattan, right?
Yeah.
And Brooklyn is pretty straightforward, too. You have the avenues. And how is it when you, Sasha, when you're asking people on the street for directions, have you gotten good responses?
Well, I pick my targets well. I always ask an older woman because they're never mean about it. They're always really nice. Sometimes they don't speak English and I have to use their Google Translate to ask them, but it always works. It's also a last resort because most of the time I just figure it out myself, and also people give bad directions, like I've been misled before. But
right, because people themselves haven't been using their brains for navigation for some time.
Yeah,
right?
Exactly.
I was thinking that you might also have to pick your targets, as you said, in that you have to find someone who's not completely buried in their surveillance phone walking down the street.
Yeah, which is usually an older person.
Yeah.
That's true. I know when I come to the station once a week, I have to ride the subway in Manhattan, and then I take the PATH train over, which is basically the subway between Manhattan and New Jersey. And it's always interesting to get on the car and to see how many people are looking at a surveillance phone or some other surveillance device in their hand, in their lap, and not looking up and being present, really. And sometimes I am the only person. Mm-hmm. But to your point, Sasha, quite often it's me not looking at a surveillance phone, and it's whoever is over the age of, I don't know, probably 60, is the candidate for someone who's not looking at a screen. Do you notice that as well, Lucy? When you're walking on the street, what is it like being one of the only people who's still looking around as you walk through New York City?
I mean, it's kind of awesome because you get to observe people and they don't know that you're observing them.
Yeah.
And like, I don't know, Jameson's boyfriend has like, he came to the city and he was like showing us all this like graffiti and stuff. And now I look around and I look up and I like recognize different like pieces and tags and stuff. And I look for them around, and it's really cool, honestly.
Yeah, New York used to be the place where everyone was always looking around. Of course, tourists tend to be the ones who look up. But mm-hmm. once you're done with that, after the first couple of days, you're looking around, you see the graffiti tags, you look at the architectural styles in different neighborhoods, you look at how people are dressed, yeah. you look at stickers on light poles. I'm just speaking for myself here, but it just seems in the last, I've lived in New York City for not quite 30 years. And so I've seen a real transformation. It used to be that everyone was aware, and it was, you were in contact, not physically, but you were in contact with people as you were walking around. And now it's like, you know, the way I think about it, I don't know if this thought has ever struck you, but you know, there's that genre of movies that's zombie invasion.
Yes.
And it's like, oh, well, this will never happen. There's a whole genre of zombie movies. And it's funny because, zombies are this fantastical creature that would never happen. But then the surveillance phones showed up and you realize we're living through a zombie invasion every day. Is it just me, or do you ever have that thought?
No, yeah, it's actually crazy. And especially I feel like at school, too. People are like bumping into me in the halls. I'm waiting for them. Like, I play the game where I'm like, I'm gonna wait for you to move out of my way because you're on your phone. Like, you're gonna bump into me. And they just don't even look up, and they have their AirPods in too, so they can't hear you. I'm like, oh, excuse me, like, totally can't hear you, can't see you. And it's just, and they walk slow too because they're like doing something on their phone, and it's just like totally ridiculous. And even when you finally get through to somebody and you're like, oh, you're like asking somebody a question and they're on their phone and you can hear, I don't even need to be looking at you. I can hear when you're on your phone because you answer, uh-huh, yeah, yeah, uh-huh, uh-huh. Like, it's just, I don't know, it's crazy.
I just, this whole conversation is so gratifying. thank you so much, all three of you, for being here and brightening the mood of Tectonic. If you're just tuning in, by the way, you're listening to Tectonic. My name is Mark Hurst. I'm your host for the remaining 20-some-odd minutes, and we are talking to three members of the Luddite Club based in Brooklyn, just across the river from New Jersey. Well, I guess first you go to Manhattan, then there's another river, and you get to Brooklyn, but right, just a hop, skip, and a jump away. Before we get back to the conversation, I want to say that I want to remind everyone that we are in the final days of the October Heckraiser, which is our annual month-long fundraiser for WFMU. We're not making a big pitch. You're not hearing names read like we do in the spring. But if you are interested in supporting programming like Tectonic and all the other amazing programming on WFMU, I would urge you, please go to WFMU.org and click the pledge widget, or you can go to WFMU.org/pledge, or you can go to the Tectonic playlist, which is at WFMU.org. Anyway, at the top of any of those pages, you're going to see the dog cow logo. You click on that and just put in $10, $15, $20 and help us meet our goal. Right now, Tectonic is at 67% of our goal, and we're at 71 pledges. It'd be great to get to 80 pledges by the end of this hour. And thanks to everyone who has been so generous in donating. This is the last time I'm going to make a fundraising pitch until our spring marathon. So let's make it work. Friends, please go to WFMU.org/pledge and show your support for this amazing radio station and community. Also, I want to say welcome to a new station. I said last week on Tectonic that we are beginning to syndicate Tectonic to stations nationwide, and I'm very happy to welcome a new station to Tectonic's syndication. We're being now carried by KOWS in Occidental, California. They are broadcasting to all of Sonoma County, and they've got a live stream as well. You can hear them all over the world. KOWS. If you're in Occidental or Santa Rosa or Sebastopol, you can pick them up on the terrestrial signal at 92.5 FM. And if you're listening right now from KOWS, welcome. I am so glad you're here. If you are listening outside of that range and you want your local public and or independent radio station to carry Tectonic, please direct them to tectonic.fm, tectonic.fm. There's instructions there for how to get your radio station on board, or they can just email us at syndication@wfmu.org. Again, syndication@wfmu.org. Now, back to our conversation with the three Intrepid Luddite Club members, Sasha, Jameson, and Lucy. So glad to have you on the show this evening. I wanted to ask, what is it like conversing with, relating to your classmates who are not Luddite Club members? What is it like being in a small minority of 12th graders who you're not carrying around a surveillance phone? What is that like when you talk to your classmates who are fully immersed in this stuff?
Well, I don't really think of myself as like different. I kind of just live it as part of my life at this point. But there are some things that I think are really stupid that people do. If you're talking to someone, like Jameson said, if you're talking to someone and they're snapping people back or something, or they're just, like, texting with someone and showing you things that other people are sending them, like, right. I just don't care. Also, there are a bunch of, like Lucy said, jokes. And also, people do hate on us, like, because there's a fashion trend of carrying around a flip phone. And I like dressing up, but I'm not with using technology as a prop because I think that's a little bit extra. So a lot of the time people think that I'm using a flip phone like only to like bring around with me. And then I like have an Instagram and I post about my flip phone, or like I just use it to listen to MP3s because it's aesthetic and like vintage. But that's just really not the case. So that I would say is the biggest setback for me socially having a flip phone, is that people don't think of it as a principled choice. And right. Think of it as, like, something I use for attention, maybe, which it's the opposite, actually, because it's hard to get attention when you're not on social media.
Yeah.
Jameson, Lucy? How is it for you relating to the kids who are walking around with AirPods stuck in their ear canals and so on?
I mean, it's not that hard because it's like, we've always been surrounded by it, you know, and we at some point we partook in it too. It's just kind of like, in some ways I think it's cool because it's like we're so different and we can still get along, you know, and I appreciate the people who can, you know, take what I'm doing and like saying and thinking and like not criticize it, you know, and they're like open-minded to the idea. They don't necessarily need to partake in it themselves, but they're like, they appreciate the fact that I have my own sense of self and I can represent it in that way. And I appreciate them back for it, you know?
That is so mature. Can I just say, I wish that people who were three times your age had that kind of maturity in relating to people who are different from themselves. What a great answer. Jameson, did you want to add anything?
Yeah, I also wanted to add, like, a really important part of Luddite Club is not being judgmental, because a lot of the criticism we get is that like people think we're like elite, we get the word elite, pretentious, you know, judgmental, all this stuff. But I know kind of what I said about against the abuse, we're against the abuse of technology. I think we also recognize that sometimes it's technology abusing people, and about how these like algorithms have been methodically tested to especially target young developing minds. And like, I'm not gonna, like, it's so hard to step away from, like, it is a real addiction, and I would never judge somebody for I guess like falling like prey to such a big evil system going on. So
yeah, that's really well put. It's in a way it's not their fault when they have multi-trillion dollar companies hiring the most highly trained psychologists in the world to build a system that is tuned to manipulate them and addict them. Mm-hmm. And then why should we blame the victim in that case? Have you heard about this book that just came out a few months ago? It's called The Anxious Generation by Jonathan Haidt. Does that ring any bells?
Yeah, I've heard about that.
He's an NYU professor, and he makes the case that the introduction of the iPhone and other addictive surveillance devices in its wake correlates with this rise in mental health issues with teenagers. And he suggests, and no one, I don't think anyone disagrees that those two trends have correlated. The question is it causal? Did the iPhone and other technologies cause the mental health crisis? He argues that yes, it's causal. It's because of these trillion-dollar companies doing their thing that, as you just described it, Jameson, that young people all over the world actually are having higher rates of mental health issues. Do you have any anecdotal or gut feeling as a young person yourself? You've been in community with hundreds of other teenagers. What is your sense of Jonathan Haidt's proposal that it's causal? Any thoughts?
I think it's true. I've been saying this for years since quarantine. I mean, I was like sucked into it for a while, and it was like a really big thing for me. Like I was kind of like really sad all the time because I was always looking at things online, and even then I knew like what was causing it, and then it just seemed intuitive to stop using it. But sometimes it's hard to put it that simply, and people just don't know how to get out. But I do think it's causal.
Yeah, and I also think like it's such a cycle, because the time and space it takes to like have these realizations and realize, oh, this is what's making me anxious, oh, I think I'm feeling anxious, and like basically consider yourself, like that takes time and space that an iPhone won't let you have, constantly right. Grabbing at your attention. Like I find that a lot of people are just spending so much less time in their own heads, because the second they're left alone with themselves, they can pull out an iPhone. And so it's this thing of, I don't know, the worse the problem gets, kind of, I don't know, it's also, the phone is also taking away their tools to help themselves in a way. Like, it takes away your self-control. It takes away your attention span. It's just making it more and more impossible almost for you to help yourself. I think it takes away people's agency, and that's what's so like disturbing. And I remember in quarantine, like I literally felt like I could not help myself, and that was so scary. It was so scary, and I just couldn't be alone with myself. Like I couldn't stand to be in my own head, and I didn't have to because I had an iPhone. And yeah, it was really, really detrimental to my mental health, I'd say.
Thanks for sharing that, Jameson. I think a lot of people have similar stories from lockdown, you know, being stuck inside and having just these manipulative devices for company. On the topic of addiction, by the way, I just want to put in a pointer to a past show. If anyone feels that they are dealing with internet addiction, there is a group called the ITAA, which stands for Internet and Technology Addicts Anonymous. And if you go, I interviewed a member of the ITAA here on Tectonic, and you can go and listen to that interview in the archives at tectonic.fm. That's T-E-C-H, tonic.fm. And it's a show from June 12th. 2023. And if anyone needs help, they have free meetings and a lot of resources. There's also a site at internetaddictsanonymous.org. What would you say, this is a question for all three of you, what would you say to a young person or an older person who is considering taking a first step? They don't want to give up their surveillance device just yet, but what are some baby steps, let's say, that they could start doing something actively to see how it feels to take a couple of steps in this direction?
I would say something that's really interesting that somebody came to club with, and I was like, that's a great idea, is turning your phone into black and white. And it's just crazy, I guess, how you feel so much less compelled to go on it when there's not all these bright, shiny colors trying to stimulate your brain. I don't know if screen time is super helpful, but at least then it's a reminder of, oh, the phone's telling me to get off the phone. I should get off the phone.
You're talking about a feature on the iPhone called screen time that tracks how long you've been on different apps.
Yeah.
Lucy, any suggestions? Could be anything.
Yeah, I did black and white for a while. It helped. Yeah, a lot of people we know do it too. Honestly, setting goals for yourself outside of your phone, like I'm going to read 20 pages today, and then it's like you have time now, and it's like usually you would stop and scroll, and now you're like, well, I have to read 20 pages today, so let me go do that. Or doing your homework when like otherwise you could be scrolling, just like getting your stuff done, which is a huge Luddite thing because you have to get your stuff done, otherwise you can't submit it until like that night for school. But just like making, like, not procrastinating, I guess. That's what I'm trying to say.
Great. Sasha, what's a tip?
Well, this is an extremely small step, but I did this probably a year or two before I got rid of social media. Just, like, unfollow everybody you don't know, because there's no reason to be looking at other people who you don't know. I understand keeping up with your friends, which is still toxic in a lot of ways, but if you're following people and looking at people who you just don't know on social media, it's just, it makes you have really unrealistic standards for yourself and just makes you obsessed with someone else's life who you have no involvement in, and it's really a waste of time.
That's a great point. So follow fewer people as a first step, and then eventually you may get to the point where you're not following anybody at all, right?
Yeah.
In that way, which presumably would open up time for you to actually have conversations in person with those same people. Mm-hmm. Which I would guess are better. How long do you think the three of you are going to keep this up? Some people would say this is okay for 12th grade, maybe even through college. Those are somewhat circumscribed experiences. You know, you have some support network, but once you enter the workforce, you know, your employer may require you to have a surveillance phone to do this and that. What is your feeling right now for how long you will maintain these practices? I'd like to hear from each of you.
I really want to keep this up as long as long as I can. Like, I really, really cannot ever imagine going back to an iPhone. But I also recognize that there are going to be issues the older I get and, like, the more serious life becomes, I guess. But I'm really going to try to fight to keep the flip phone. And it's just going to get progressively harder. But I'm going to fight and I'm going to do everything I can, everything in my power to really, like, stand up for myself in that way. And I also think we're coming up, hopefully, with better alternatives. Like, there's all these stuff like light phones, and maybe there's a phone where it has the stuff for my job, but I can also, you know, not have any of the bad stuff.
Right. Lucy? How long were you going to keep it up, do you think?
I mean, the first thing that came to mind is, like, until I get arthritis and can't type on it anymore. Sorry. But I don't know, because you can always use your computer for the things that you need to do. And then if you don't end up using your computer for it, then you're like, oh, I didn't actually need to do
need
that.
To do it,
and
right.
So I'm not doing it. So it kind of just, like, dumbs down all your decisions for you. Like, there's a very clear and distinct, like, need and don't need. And it's just, it's an easier life. There's no ifs and buts.
Well said. Sasha?
Well, I, like, am kind of thinking not too much about the future because I'm enjoying the simple life that I can have as a kid. But depending on what I want to do when I grow up, I might have to have a phone that's more competent in communicating with a bunch of people at once, which doesn't mean that I'm going to start using social media or anything that's unnecessary. I just might need to be able to have a more convenient mode of communication, which is fine. But for now, I'm having fun. So I want to at least have it through college for sure.
Okay, well, we're going to hold you to it through college as long as you can and until you get arthritis. So those those are the three answers. I just want to say I feel lighter and more optimistic coming out of this show. Often I'll leave a Tectonic broadcast thinking, I can't believe those companies are doing this now. And I leave and I'm kind of grumpy going home having just talked to someone about just how dystopian everything is getting. But the three of you and your fellow Luddite Club members are, I feel like you're charting a path forward for all of us that is so much healthier than what these trillion-dollar sludge factories want for us. What you're doing is inspiring. It is grounded in your own experience, but also with a thoughtful maturity that I find very impressive. I mean, knowing that there are young people your age who are thinking along these lines and putting it into action and modeling this for your peers, I wish I could give you a standing ovation. But just consider that Tectonic listeners, I hope, are all applauding what you're doing. And I really wish you the best wherever you end up going next year, and keep in touch with the show. You're all officially friends of Tectonic, and I hope you'll all three keep in touch. So Sasha, Jameson, Lucy, thank you so much for being on Tectonic this evening.
Thank you.
And there you have it, friends. The Luddite Club, based in Brooklyn, New York, with three representatives talking to us about a better way forward with technology. And I really appreciate all three of them and what they are showing is possible as good, strong, and legitimate Luddites. As I said at the beginning of the show, not anti-technology, but thoughtful about which technology we can use when in order to create good outcomes for ourselves, our families, and our communities. Good on you, Luddite Club. I am a big fan. And that's about all the time I have for this evening. We're going to go out to, we're going to have an outro by the band called Maps. It's a song called Lack of Sleep. And until next time, friends, I have some homework for you. It's the same homework that I had last week and the week before, but if you haven't done it, you can start now. It is as follows. Avoid Apple, abandon Amazon, forget Facebook, and whatever you do, friends, get off Google. Have a great week. You're listening to the greatest radio station in the world, WFMU East Orange, WMFU Mount Hope, in New York City and Rockland County at 91.9 FM, and online at WFMU.org. Stay tuned for Dave Mandel.
My goodness, those boys can play. That's Yes and 5% for Nothing. I play that as my intro theme every week, and I never say what it is. Some of you might know what it is. Many of you might not. 5% for Nothing, a piece written by drummer Bill Bruford, a veritable god in the prog rock world, and it appeared on their Fragile album, Yes. The show is called It's Complicated. Welcome. My name is Dave Mandel. I'm the host of this show. I'm here every Monday following Tectonic. I'm here from 7 to 8 playing you the finest in prog and prog adjacent music. Welcome. Always delighted to be here playing music for you. And this week we're going to, if I can find it, we're going to start big. We're going to dive right into like the 11-foot part of the pool here. And maybe gradually, you know, swim out to the shallow end over time, you know, sort of cool down. So prepare for this. I'm going to start with a track from a band called Prism, Japanese group. This is a recent thing, a track from a 2017 album called Celebrate. And this is really fast and flashy. And I guess you might properly call it fusion, but it's pretty proggy, and it will start out, if I'm not mistaken, with a really fast riff in 9/8 time, if you care about that kind of thing. And this is at Prism with a track called Virgo 9. from the Why Play Three Notes When You Can Play 30 Notes School, which is fine. The band Prism and a track called Virgo 9 from an album called Celebrate, from released in 2017. Some maniacal fusion there, reminiscent at times of Brand X, maybe my favorite fusion band of all time, Brand X, which was originally Phil Collins' group. Brand X was a group that Phil Collins formed or co-formed at one point on a break from Genesis in the mid-70s. Anyway, that was not Brand X, but it sounded like them here and there. We're going to hear something older now. I'm going to play something from a group called 930 Fly, 9.30 Fly.